Good morning. Definitely back doing what I'm more comfortable doing. For sure. Please turn back to John chapter 20. We are going to get a glimpse of the Easter story today. I'm really excited about this passage. It has really moved my heart this week. And if you need some encouragement this morning, if you need to find some solid ground, then you're in the right place this morning. Because we're going to discover some amazing eternal truths about the risen Lord Jesus Christ. So we're coming to John chapter 20. Please turn to it so you've got it open in front of you. We're returning this morning to our series of people who encountered Jesus Christ. And this is the first encounter we have this morning with the risen Jesus Christ. Up until now we've been looking at all kinds of people who Jesus encountered during his earthly life. Now we come to the resurrection. And we see some significant things have changed as we come to look at John chapter 20 this morning. But let me begin by pulling you back to some of the events of this rather tragic week that we have been through. It reminds us again that none of us know what twists and turns lie ahead for us in this world. I wonder where your thoughts went to this week as you heard about the tragic death of this priest in France whose throat was slit while serving communion. Where do you go with your thoughts when something like that happens? Where do you go when the threat of terror and fear takes yet another twist and turn? To a place where it seems that no one is immune and no one is safe. Let's broaden that out a little bit more. Where do you go with your tears when life is difficult? Where do you go when life is not as it should be? Where do you go when relationships fracture and break? Where do you go when news of serious illness comes into your home and into your family? Where do you go with your tears when someone you love dies? Where do you go when tears of loneliness flow into those quiet places? Where do you go in those times when your hopes are dashed? I want to invite you this morning to come to the empty tomb. I want to invite you this morning to come and stand with me and alongside Mary here in John chapter 20. I want you to come and to stand beside someone who's weeping. I want you to come and stand beside someone whose life has completely fallen apart. And I want you to bring your tears and your concerns. And maybe in your imagination you want to bring someone with you. Because I want to create for a few minutes this morning in our imaginations the sense that we're all standing around the empty tomb together this morning. And as you listen to Mary weeping, to stoop down and to bend and to look into the empty tomb as she does here in verses 11 and 12. And to be surprised again by what we see. You see, John wants us to grasp that through the death and resurrection of Jesus, something extraordinary has taken place. Not just to Jesus, but to the way that the world is, to the way that God is, and to those whose faith is in the risen Christ. You see, up until now, Jesus has always spoken about God as Father. He's always spoken about as God as the one who sent him, or as my Father and my God. Up until this point, his followers have been called servants and friends and disciples. Now everything has changed. Look at chapter 20 and verse 17 and feel the full force of this verse. As Jesus says to Mary, I am returning to my Father and to your Father and to my God and your God. I want you to feel the force of this story. Because through the death and resurrection of Jesus, something has decisively altered. A new kind of relationship has sprung to life as the followers of Jesus are welcomed into a new world, into a new kind of relationship where we can know God in the same way that Jesus did. Where through the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ this morning, you can come to that empty tomb and you can say, my God, my Father, because of what Jesus has done. Because he has become your God. He's become your Father through faith in the risen Jesus Christ. So let's return for a moment to the empty tomb. Let's stand together with Mary for a few moments. And let's allow this profound resurrection encounter to change us and to challenge us in the way that we relate to God this morning. I want to invite you to come and stand with me at the empty tomb. I want you to bring with you your tears and your disappointments, your fears, your doubts, your questions. And I want you to stand beside Mary, who's weeping, because her world is totally falling apart. Maybe there's someone you want to bring with you. As together in our imaginations, we stand in front of the empty tomb. And then in our imaginations, we stoop down. And we look into the empty tomb and we find that all we can see are the grave clothes. Because Jesus is alive. Because Jesus has risen from the dead. And as we stoop and look into that empty tomb, we make some amazing discoveries. And I want to explore some of those discoveries with you this morning as we come in our imaginations and we stand in front of this empty tomb. Here's the first thing that we discover this morning. That here is a place where we can bring our tears. Let's come into the story. If you've got the Bible open in front of you this morning in John chapter 20, John tells us that this is happening at the very start of the day. It's still dark. There may be just the faint glimmers of a sunrise beginning to appear on the horizon. Jewish custom dictated a responsibility that you were to mourn at the tomb of a loved one for the first 3 days following burial. The other Gospels tell us that Mary came to the tomb in the company of other women for this early morning ritual. Verse 2 picks up the sense that there are others in this story where Mary says, "We don't know where they have put him." But John's focus is on Mary Magdalene. Because John wants us to see firsthand what happens when we encounter the risen Christ. Arriving at the tomb, she discovers that the stone has been rolled away and the tomb is empty, and compound her sense of grief and loss. It now seems that the body of her Lord and the body of her Master has now been stolen, and the tears begin to flow. And then in verse 11, she bends down and she looks into the tomb. And through her tears and her grief, she sees two angels. It's curious, isn't it, if you look back to this account, that Peter and John are here only moments earlier in verse 3, and all they see are the strips of cloth that are lying there. Could it be that we can only see the angels through our tears? Perhaps that's what John is hinting at here. As through our tears, it is the angels that ask the question, "Mary, why are you weeping?" Dressed in white, John tells us, sitting where Jesus' body had been, one at the head, the other at the foot, as angels ask, "Mary, why are you crying?" And at the tomb, we discover that there is a time and a place for tears. And Mary answers in verse 13, "They have taken away my Lord's body, and I do not know where they have put him." When people are in tears, the angels ask why. When people are afraid, it's the angels who tell us not to fear. For Mary, the very worst thing possible has happened. They have taken away my Lord, and I don't know where they've put him. And perhaps as we stand with Mary this morning at the empty tomb, you too can hear the angels question, "Why are you crying? What has brought you to this point?" Perhaps like Mary, something or someone's been taken away. A husband, a wife, a child, your rights, your dignity, your hopes, your dreams. "They have taken away my Lord's body." As the angelic messengers ask, "Why are you crying?" My friends, God is concerned about our tears. He is close to the brokenhearted. He lifts up those who bow down. And one of my favorite verses in the Old Testament, we read this: "You have kept a record of my days of wandering. You have stored my tears in your bottle. You have counted each one of them." It was at the graveside of a dear friend that Jesus burst into tears. When someone that he loved had died. And in this moving and powerful encounter at the empty tomb, this reminds us that there is a place for our tears, that tears have a natural rhythm. As here, the empty tomb is our tears and our longings, and they resonate with the tears of Mary. So here's the first thing we discover as we stoop down with Mary and as we look into the empty tomb, we realize that this is the appropriate place for our tears. But then in verse 14, everything begins to change, doesn't it? Secondly, we discover that the empty tomb is a place where we encounter the risen Christ. Verse 14. She senses that someone's behind her. You often get that kind of sense, don't you, sometimes? Someone's standing close to you, you can't quite see them. Mary realizes that there's someone close by. She turns around and she sees Jesus standing there. But John says she didn't realize who it was. And John tells us in no uncertain terms that this is the risen Christ. But then Mary fails to recognize him. In the previous, in this precious account, we get to read about the very first resurrection appearance of Jesus. It was to be the first of many resurrection appearances. But here, clearly, there is something different about this resurrection body because Jesus is not instantly recognized. Let's read on in the story. Verse 15, woman, he said, why are you crying? Who is it you're looking for? Thinking he was the gardener, she said, sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you put him and I will get him. Jesus said to her, Mary. Something has changed. As later we discover that Jesus' resurrection body is no longer bound by time and space, that he can come and go at will and he can appear in a locked room, yet the gospel accounts are very keen to stress that this new resurrection body enjoys food and conversation. That this is a body that is clearly visible and can be touched, as John goes on to make clear. The implications are clear in this passage. This is the risen Jesus. Death has been defeated. The cross has worked. Jesus is who he claimed to be. Death is not the end of the story. The price has been paid. Wow! And this time it's Jesus that asks the question. Why are you crying? Who are you looking for? Here's that same gentle concern that the angels have shown, now being shown by Jesus himself. So we stand together in our imaginations this morning around the empty tomb with Mary. Many of us can identify with her sense of grief, her sense of loss. Many of us can identify with something or someone that's been taken away from us. And we discover that the empty tomb is a place for our tears. It's an appropriate place to come when it feels like our world has fallen apart. But we also discover, don't we, if we come to the empty tomb, that's where we discover the risen Jesus. Here's the third discovery that we find in this passage. As the story goes on, we get a glimpse of new creation. Mary's confused, isn't she? She can't work out who she's talking to. In verse 15, John tells us that she thinks it's the gardener. She said, sir, if you carried him away, tell me where you put him and I will get him. Mary's guessing that this is the gardener. This is the person who comes to tend the tombs and to keep the place clean and tidy and to look after the place where Jesus has been buried. On one level, she's completely mistaken. But on another level, she is profoundly right. Because this is the new creation and Jesus is the beginning of it. The picture language is deeply profound. God's initial creation began in a garden. A garden that was ruined through sin and rebellion of those who had been given responsibility to care for it. God's creation was thrown into chaos as the whole natural world was caught up in Adam and Eve's desire to be like God. And today, my friends, we live in that same fallen world. A world of chaos. A world of pain, a world of brokenness, a world full of wars and rumors of wars, with earthquakes and natural disasters, with the rise of ISIS and the threat of global terror in a way that we've never seen it before. And yet here at the empty tomb, we get a glimpse of the new creation and of the gardener who one day will fulfill God's promise of a new heaven and a new earth, of a day when there will be no more mourning or crying or pain because the old order of things has passed away. And as dawn breaks on that Sunday morning, on the first day of the week, here is the new Adam. Here is the true gardener who has defeated the power of death forever, the one who is charged with bringing the chaos of God's original creation into a new order, uprooting the thorns and uprooting the thistles of sin and evil and replacing it with signs of harvest. So we stand with Mary, the empty tomb. We stand with our regrets and our failures and our disappointments and our pain. We stand with our doubts and our questions. We stand because we've been battered and bruised by this fallen world in which we live, and yet here we get just a glimpse of new creation. We get a taste of the one who will bring the new heavens and the new earth about. At one level, Mary's grasped something deeply profound, but she still hasn't recognized who she's talking to, has she? But fourthly, we discover, as Mary hears her own name being spoken, that the empty tomb is the place where our relationship with Jesus begins. Verse 16, Jesus said to her, Mary. Is it a greeting? I wonder. Is it a gentle rebuke? Is it an invitation? Or is it all three rolled into one? Mary, come on, don't you recognize me? And of course she knows him, and yet on one hand she doesn't know him, because Jesus is both the same and yet he is different. He's alive, but he's alive in a new kind of way. This isn't simply just another human resurrection like Lazarus or some of the other people that Jesus raised from the dead during his ministry. Jesus' resurrection is profoundly different. This isn't temporary, this is eternal. Jesus won't go on to die again. This resurrection life is forever. Perhaps that helps us to explain what happens next. Hearing her own name from the lips of Jesus allows her to recognize him. Her response is one of love and deep devotion. Look at verse 16. She turned towards him. She cried out in Aramaic, Rabboni, which means teacher. Her response is one of love and deep devotion. And overcome by emotion, she grabs hold of him. And Jesus says, don't hold on to me. I haven't yet gone to the Father. A very clear sign that this new relationship was not going to be like the old one. Something has changed. The days of traveling around Judea and Galilee have come to an end. Soon it will be time for Jesus to go to the Father. Don't cling on to me, says Jesus. Don't try to keep me here. Because Jesus is no longer known by touch. A new kind of relationship has begun through faith. As Jesus was going to say to Thomas a few days later, you have believed, but you have because you've seen. But blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. You see, the clue lies in what Jesus says next, in the message that Mary is given for the disciples, where this new kind of relationship with God is spelled out. I'm going to the one who is my Father and my God. Your Father. Your God. You say that this morning? This is my God. This is my Father. Something very special about being called by name, isn't there? I mixed someone's name up this morning, and I'm really sorry. But we love to be called by name, don't we? Because when somebody calls us by name, there's a sense in which they know us well enough to call us by name. We like to be addressed by our name. One of my favorite verses in the Old Testament comes in Isaiah, where we read these words, fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. And you're mine. Jesus has called you by name. If you're a follower of Jesus Christ, I hope you have responded to that call. And Jesus himself, speaking about his relationship with him as a shepherd and us as the sheep, he says, I know my own sheep. My sheep know me. Don't miss this powerful invitation, these words of deep concern that lie at the very heart of this encounter between Mary and the risen Christ. At the cross, at the resurrection, at the empty tomb, here's where a relationship with Jesus begins. And finally in this story, we discover what obedience and faith looks like. Mary's given a task by Jesus at the end of this story, isn't he? Verse 17, Jesus says, don't hold on to me. He says, I want you to go to the disciples. I want you to tell the disciples what you have seen. It's a task that she willingly embraces, to tell the other disciples that Jesus is alive. It echoes, doesn't it, the great commission that has been given to all of us as the followers of Jesus Christ. It's the words of Jesus himself in Luke's gospel in one of his last resurrection experiences. This is what he says. He says, this is what is written, that Christ will suffer and rise from the dead, and on the third day, and repentance and forgiveness of sins will be preached in his name to all nations, beginning at Jerusalem. And you are witnesses of these things. And by faith, we are witnesses of these things. Mary does as Jesus asked her to do. She responds in obedience and faith. And you know what happens? Well, Luke tells us. Luke tells us this, that they didn't believe the women because their words sounded like nonsense. Ever try to share your faith in Jesus Christ and had that kind of response? It's nonsense. It's just make-believe. Don't be put off when people refuse to believe. But follow Mary's challenging example here of obedience and faith. I have seen the Lord. So what are we to make of this encounter this morning? Let's come back to where we started for a few moments. Let's come back to that invitation to stand with Mary at the empty tomb. I don't know what you brought with you this morning to the empty tomb. I don't know who in your imagination you may have brought with you to stand with you. But for Mary, it felt like her whole life had fallen apart. As Mary stoops and looks into the empty tomb, we, like her, make some amazing discoveries this morning. We discover, firstly, that this is the appropriate place for us to bring our tears and our regrets and our doubts and our questions. This is the right place to come, to the empty tomb. We discover there the risen Jesus. That Jesus is alive, that death has been defeated, that the cross has worked, that the price has been paid. We discover a little taste, a little glimpse of new creation, the gardener of God's new creation. Just a glimpse. But that's all we need sometimes, just a glimpse to give us hope of an eternal future. We discover that this is the place where a relationship with Jesus begins. Mary, as Jesus calls us by name. And we discover what faith and obedience looks like, don't we? Even though people said to Mary, "You're absolutely out of your mind," she still did what Jesus told her to do. We're going to finish a little bit differently this morning, because I came across a video clip this morning that I think we'll find really helpful as we reflect on this story. See, Mark tells us in this story that there were other women who went to the tomb on that first Sunday morning. John chooses to focus in on Mary Magdalene that we've been looking at this morning. But there were other women there who looked on, and a bit like we're doing this morning, and who heard and saw what happened. One of those people was Salome. And we're going to hear a video clip of someone playing the part of Salome, reflecting on the story that we've been looking at this morning. I want to invite you to follow her reflection. And then as we watch this clip, we'll make our own personal responses to this powerful, profound encounter with the risen Christ. So let's sit back and watch this clip together.
I don't really know how. What would be the word for terrified and excited? Do you know? Huh. Well, all I know is we were both of those things that morning. And that I ran faster than sandals ought to be able to carry you. We had to tell everybody else what happened. After Jesus was crucified, it was all over. I mean, were we wrong about him?
We had to have been. Jesus was dead, so we hid. Hid in fear. That morning, a small group of us women went to prepare his body with spices and ointments. I mean, it was the very least that we could do, you know? Even though none of this made any sense. For 3 days. That was the longest 3 days of my life. We were so afraid. Oh, but Sunday. My head was racing faster than my feet. We bolted from that tomb. None of the other disciples were going to believe when we tried to explain. I mean, a massive sealed tombstone moved. Those Roman soldiers silenced. Blinding angels, unnecessary grave clothes, now lay folded neatly inside an empty tomb as if they had some sort of secret to tell. Well, a picture's worth a thousand words in an empty tomb. It's worth a thousand promises. Do you see what this means? We were waiting for the Messiah to come and restore Israel. Jesus exceeded all our expectations. I mean, he was the Messiah that nobody could contain. So we were hoping too small. This means... This means that everything that has been taken, God can restore. He lives so that we can too. Our greatest roadblock has been removed because not even the doors of death can shut out the certainty of life through Jesus. Our strongest enemy has now been defeated. So you tell me, what rival can come up against him? Kings, presidents, powers that be, whatever is happening right now and whatever is to come. I mean, the lowest lows and the highest highs, none of these things can make that grave any less empty. Nothing. No temple veil, no checkered past, no hellish lie. It can't stop the mortal from putting on immortality. He softened the sting of death and swallowed up our defeat in victory. Child, I don't have all the answers. But I tell you, standing near those discarded grave clothes, those secret-keeping pieces of cloth, well, the secret's out now. He's not dead. He's not missing. He hasn't been taken away. No, he is alive. He walked out of that tomb and left death and discarded grave clothes behind. He is alive. Yeah. If there is a way to be made, is through him. If there is hope in this world, his name is Jesus the Christ. Oh, he lived. He lived, the Messiah. Our Messiah. My Messiah. Yes, Jesus. He's alive. And the secret's out. It's out.
Powerful stuff. Let's be quiet, shall we, for a few moments. Let's encounter the risen Jesus as we make our own response. And then in a few moments, Phil will come and lead us in some songs.